You're listening to Amy Keeps It Creepy, the podcast where I share my obsession with true crime and the paranormal with you. I'm your host, Amy Brooks. A ghost doctor seen working in his office. Schoolboys pinching butts and pulling pranks in death. If the ghosts don't get you, the bats and creepy critters just might. This is the infamous Preston School of Industry, commonly known as Preston Castle, a former boys' youth correctional facility and paranormal hotspot in California. Hi, creepsters. This is a flash forward. My guest that you're about to hear couldn't, or wouldn't, talk about a certain infamous murder that occurred on the grounds. She claimed that she was unable to talk about it because the victim's family still resides in the area. I can totally respect that, and my guest was really nice about it. However, Preston Castle had no problem giving detailed accounts of the murder to ghost hunters and ghost adventures. Alas, Amy Keeps It Creepy didn't get the same scoop. We'll get there, though. But my listeners deserve the full story, so I will tell you about the murder of Anna Corbin, because her ghost is said to be the main spirit to haunt Preston Castle. First, a bit of backstory. Preston Castle, officially named the Preston School of Industry, was opened in 1894, when someone finally realized that sticking kids as young as 12 in a hard-ass scary prison like Sam Quentin or Folsom probably wasn't a smart idea. Incidentally, the bricks for Preston were actually made with prison labor from San Quentin and Folsom. Juvenile offenders and wards of the state as young as 8 and as old as 20 were housed together and expected to learn a trade. It was run like a military school and had good intentions to provide troubled youth a chance in life, having marketable skills. Some of these kids were bad, though. Troubled. Some were little psychos in the making. Not sure how good an idea it was to put 8-year-olds together with older boys, too. And throughout its years of operation, reports of poor living conditions and student mistreatment were common. The boys were constantly trying to escape, and the local townspeople would hear the sirens from the watchtowers. There was a reward to return the escaped boys back to the prison, so I guess you could make some extra cash on the side catching a fugitive. And it was also commonplace for the moms in the area to warn their sons to behave or they would be sent to Preston. I have no doubt that the threat kept many in line because it's a menacing and creepy place. And it's even creepier today. It was abandoned and left for dead for over 40 years before the current Preservation Society leased it from the state. It's no surprise, with such a grim history, Preston Castle has regular reports of full-bodied apparitions, disembodied voices, cold spots, and just a general feeling of dread. So, who haunts Preston Castle? Well, I'm guessing it's the home to many ghosts. Many people died there. Of illness, drowning, possible mistreatment, and murder. The most well-known and violent death is said to be of the head housekeeper, Anna Corbin, who was bludgeoned to death in the castle in 1950. Though there were many unexplained deaths among the wards of the institution over the years, and there is said to be even a lost cemetery on the grounds that contains the graves of 23 former inmates, it is the murder of Anna Corbin that represents the castle's most enduring mystery. Accounts of the grisly crime vary, even among newspapers of the time, but most agree that Anna Corbin was found brutally beaten to death inside a locked room in the castle. Why was the room locked? Did someone lock the door behind them after they murdered her? Was it someone who worked there that had access to a key? Access to her office where she was? Now, interesting, a gardener had brought her flowers that morning, right before she died. She was said to have died in the morning. Now, that is a bit creepy. The gardener bringing flowers to the widow kind of thing. I don't know if it was being sweet or maybe he was kind of a stalker. Some accounts say that she was found in the kitchen, while others claim that she was killed in the mattress room or near the disinfecting pool in the basement. Oh, what the hell is a disinfecting pool? That sounds ominous. The disinfecting pool. Is that where they make you wash to get rid of lice and stuff? Oh. A local newspaper article I found reported that poor Anna was found in a storeroom, wrapped in a rug, beaten beyond recognition, and with a rope around her neck. The door was padlocked behind her. That storeroom was in the basement, and you will hear my guest talk about the basement and how there is a dark energy down there, although she doesn't elaborate. When it comes to who was the murderer, the list might as well span several pages, for as suspects, the police considered everyone, inmates and staff. Maybe that gardener stalking her with flowers? I don't know. And just to let you know, the boys were furious about the murder. Anna was a mother figure to them. They were extremely fond of her. Anna was a kind widow who had lost her own boy. Think about it. They didn't have any parental support or love locked up at Preston. Some of them stated that if they found the killer, he wouldn't be safe. Though all 657 wards of the school at the time, along with staff, were questioned in relation to the death, and there were three trials, no one was ever convicted. A 19-year-old named Eugene Monroe was considered by many to be the prime suspect at the time. He was also being prosecuted for a murder of a teen girl that was eerily similar to Anna Corbin's murder. Told you, budding psychopaths. He was 19. He had no business there with all of the underage kids. All the 8-year-old boys, come on. He was a rough and evil guy. One inmate, William J. Mercer, claimed on the witness stand that he and Eugene were, quote, having a secretive homosexual relationship. That was brave of him to admit in a 1950s courtroom full of strangers. Mercer said that during a time when they were engaging in a sex act, Anna had walked in and witnessed them. He claimed that it infuriated Eugene, and he said he was going to kill her for it. After three trials, ridiculous, two of which ended in a hung jury, Eugene Monroe was eventually acquitted. And just so you know, a year later, he confessed to the murder and rape of a pregnant woman in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and was sentenced to life in prison. Lovely. He remained adamant in his denial that he had nothing to do with the death of Anna Corbin. To this day, her murder remains unsolved. Horrible. Now, there are other stories of murder, including the deaths of Sam Goines and Herbert Hoover, apparently killed by guards of Preston. Now, it's hard to find details about these murders as officials tried to keep the image of the institution clean, even to this day. It's a tragic blend of mystery, history, and horror. I will post the photos of Preston Castle on creepypodcast.com so you can see for yourself how truly creepy this place is. I'm also on Instagram at creepypodcast, and my personal account is at Miss Amy Brooks. Please subscribe to Amy Keeps It Creepy on Apple Podcasts or wherever you podcast so you never miss an episode. Preston Castle has an active paranormal community, which holds nighttime investigations and ghost hunts. In charge of these events is my guest today, Connie. Hi, Connie.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'll post on my website, creepypodcast.com, pictures of what Preston Castle looks like. It's magnificent in a creepy, ominous way. I mean, it screams horror film. Connie, please describe what it looks like to listeners.
Well, from the outside, especially when you're driving down the road, it looks very ominous. It's got a couple of really tall towers, and as you are driving up towards the castle and you drive through the gates, I mean, it's just kind of, it's huge, and it's just kind of looming, but it's beautiful as well. Especially, you know, the architecture to it.
Yeah, it's entirely brick. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's gothic almost looking.
Yes, very much so.
Haunting the darkened corridors are dark tales of mystery and murder. Okay, let's start with one. Convicted murderer Samuel Goines arrived at Preston School in July 1918. Within his first year, Samuel had attempted to escape Preston three times. On April 19, 1919, during his third attempt, a Preston guard named John Kelly shot Samuel in the back. He later died in the infirmary. Does Samuel haunt Preston?
We don't have any confirmed information on that. I couldn't tell you whether he actually does or not. I have personally not had any confirmation or have gotten any, I would say messages from him. I really couldn't tell you as far as any type of hauntings that we have there.
Well, tell me about some experiences that you've had.
I've had several experiences. I've been going up there for probably 11 plus years. One of the very first nights that I ever did an investigation, I went there as just a guest for an investigation one night, and it was extremely cold. We were freezing, and I wasn't quite prepared for that. But in one of the locations in the castle, the doctor's office, I happened to be standing directly across the entrance door into the doctor's office, and we were conducting EVPs. And as I'm looking straight ahead, I see what looks like a man in a white jacket.
No way. So like a full-bodied apparition?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was just kind of like a profile, type look. I could even see that it seemed like he had dark hair. I could kind of see the outline of his hair and then a white jacket.
And he just looked like a real person?
No, it was almost, he was see-through. It was very quick as he passed by. I could see through him, but still see just a slight image of him, just enough to where I could definitely see where he was wearing a white jacket and he had dark hair, but I couldn't see like any facial features or anything like that.
Amazing. Amazing.
It was dark. It was very dark. And so there were other guests in the castle, but they were in a location quite far from where we were.
And they weren't wearing a doctor's white jacket either. Come on.
No, not that I know of. No. But I did ask one of the girls that had her back to the doorway or the entranceway. I asked her, hey, did anybody, just walk down the hall? Because I thought I saw somebody just walk past the door. And so she steps out to take a look, and no, there was absolutely no one there. And I asked her pretty quickly. So she would have seen somebody walking at that point, because there isn't really any place for anyone else to go that they couldn't have been seen as quickly as I asked her to look.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Now, is that doctor's office, is that by the infirmary?
No, so the floors are almost shaped like a T. So it's on the same floor as the infirmary, but I wouldn't say that it was next to it. It's almost kind of like you had to walk down the hall, make a left, walk down another long hall to get to the infirmary.
Because you'll see on creepypodcast.com, there are pictures of the infirmary and they're creepy. So what's going on in there?
We get a lot of activity in the infirmary. I think it's just very charged as far as the things that go on in there, feelings and emotions and all that other stuff. We have gotten a lot of EVPs, and when people use the spirit box, we've gotten responses back from voices through the spirit box.
Like what? What do they say to you?
There's been several times we've gotten cuss words through there. Things that might be a little inappropriate as far as the younger audience. We've gotten a lot of different voices and a few names, but nothing, I would say, specific to, what we have in the archives, although I haven't really looked as far as that goes, but we'll get names here and there. And sometimes, we actually get yes and no responses. Or sometimes if we're in there and we're asking about, what were you sick with, if you were hurt, different stuff like that, we will actually get responses according to what we've asked. And so the last time I was in there, we were doing something similar to, if anybody watches the show with Amy and Adam, I can't recall the name at the moment, but where you wear headphones and you're listening to the spirit box and you wear a blindfold and all this other stuff so that all your senses are focused on what you're hearing through the spirit box while other people are asking questions. And so we were asking several questions, and the person that was listening to the spirit box, they were giving us pretty relative answers to our questions. So I think that was a great experience. That's the first time I've actually sat in on that type of EVP type work.
Wow.
I have been touched a couple of times.
Oh, someone touched you. That's so creepy.
I have a couple of times. Yeah, it was a little creepy. Again, you know, it was the time that I really recall being touched in that room was actually, again, my first time doing it. And we had gone into the infirmary and I was standing in between the beds, but I wasn't touching anything. I was just, it was pretty much standing in the middle of the room. And a couple of times, while I was standing there, I actually felt, and, you know, maybe call me crazy or whatever, but I actually felt somebody touch my butt a couple of times, which was really kind of weird.
Scandalous. Those boys in there touching your butt. Oh my gosh.
My eight. Yes. And so, you know, and I remember like spinning around going, okay, who just touched me there? You know, I wasn't wearing baggy clothes at the time. I didn't have anything on that would maybe brush up against me. Like, I had a jacket on, but this was definitely something that I felt enough to make me kind of whip around and see who was there.
You know the feeling of your butt being squeezed. It's not like a jacket touching you. No.
Right. No, but it was light, but it wasn't, but it was, it got my attention. So, you know, they definitely got my attention. I think about it now and I'm thinking, oh, I can laugh about it now. But at the time I was just like, okay, this is a little bit too much. And then the only other time that I recall being touched in there is we have this area that I don't know what it was used for originally, but we have a phenomenal Halloween haunt there, a phenomenal one. And anybody, you know, I highly recommend coming and checking us out. But we have this little area in there that we put up, we called it the padded room. And so there were these walls, these padded walls, and I was in there, and this was during one of our haunt nights, and I was in there and I had my hair in pigtails, and I actually felt one of my pigtails like tugged, and it was a decent amount tugged to get my attention for sure. And I was, you know, trying to check to see if they had caught on anything, but the clothing I was wearing again wouldn't have caused for me to feel that.
And do you feel that way? Do you feel like the spirits are kind of trying to get your attention?
Yeah, there's nothing that...
That's almost playful, you know? It's something like your little brother, annoying brother would do. Like,
right.
Pulling your hair.
Exactly. I don't, you know, I've never experienced anything harmful in there. I don't think really anybody has. It's more of an attention getting, let's mess with you. I think that the boys that are there, the spirits that are there are very playful, and they just want to get your attention.
So nothing in there at Preston makes you feel intimidated, or you don't feel any sense of dread anywhere?
I don't feel any dread. There is one area that's a little intimidating that I feel like there is a spirit there in the basement that he's not, I want to say he, because, you know, I feel that it's more of a male presence, and he can be very intimidating. I don't think he's harmful. I don't think he's ever hurt anybody. But sometimes he makes you feel like you're being watched. And when you have that feeling, it's not necessarily where you're scared, but you're uncomfortable. And so I don't know what his name is. I don't know anything about him. We've tried to get names. Some people think that they've gotten a couple names. We haven't really been able to check too much of it out, but he is definitely, I would say, like a stronger presence. And we try when we go down in that area to make sure that we acknowledge him. We tell him that we're here just to talk with you. If you have any messages for us, we're not here to ask you to leave. And that goes with all the spirits that are there. We don't want them to leave. That was their home. This is their place.
So they want to be there. It's not like a thing where they're stuck and they can't find the light, because that's what you see in movies.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but if they want to be there, they're welcome to stay. At the end of each night, we do make it very clear to them that they're not allowed to follow us home, that they need to stay there. We will come and visit them there. And to please don't follow us in our cars, don't follow us to our homes, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, we want them to stay there. This is definitely their place. And we're very adamant about not having people try to cross them over or invite them home or anything like that.
Right. But what's stopping the cheeky guy who pinched your butt from saying, oh, no, but I like you. I want to jump in your car and go home with you. You know, you say don't, but, you know, these guys weren't following the rules. I mean, that's how most of them got there.
Right. Right. I truly believe that you are in control of your personal space, your home, your car. And I can't say that none of them haven't gone. I don't know as far as any of them have followed anybody home or anything like that. But I'm very much a believer in standing my ground. And if I don't want them to come with me, I demand it. I tell them no, and they need to stay there. And I'll come back and visit you. Whether they actually do or not, I don't know. I've personally never had, I don't feel like I've had any of them follow me home. I don't, you know, my house is good. My car is good. And I've been going up there a long time, and I've been going up there often for a long time. So I really don't feel like, I feel like if I give them respect, they'll give me the respect back by staying put.
So what kind of people go on ghost hunts? I'm so curious.
You know, we've got people that come up for, sometimes it seems like just the history, and sometimes people are just curious. We've had some non-believers that, you know, are kind of like, prove it to me, you know, is somebody here? We've got your people that, unless the boogeyman taps them on the shoulder, they're not going to believe it type thing. And we've got the people that come up that are just truly interested in what life is like after you die and hoping to kind of get those answers.
It's the great question we all have. And right. I think everyone is fascinated by the paranormal.
Right.
And I know that's why these tours and going to haunted places, it will never go out of style. Because people, they have a curiosity. I have a curiosity. I mean, that's why I do a creepy podcast and people listen to it. It's just fascinating stuff. And, you know, we don't have the definitive answers, and there's so much theory and interest, and, you know, there's some proof out there, and, you know, you can also squash some of the proof, and they're the naysayers, but nonetheless, fascinating all around.
It truly is.
What do you do to get the ghost to come out and talk to you? There's got to be some pressure on you as a tour guide. You know, you're doing this haunted tour and people are giving you money and you're just like, God, okay, something has to happen. Do you have any effects that you bring out to encourage the ghosts, or do you say anything?
We usually, the docents and I, or whoever's there, we take a walkthrough before we even let the guests in. And a lot of that's to make sure that everything is safe for them to walk through, because the castle is kind of got its own ecosystem, and there could be animal waste and all this other stuff.
Bats in the belfry, raccoons ready to like jump out at you.
Exactly. Arr. You never know. Well, the bats are a given. There are bats, especially in the summertime when it gets warm, the bats, there's pretty much no avoiding them. So you have to deal with the bats.
Oh, they freak me out. They're flying rats. Come on.
Yeah, they are. They are. And, you know, I recommend bringing a hoodie or a hat or something, you know.
But they're not pinching your butt.
No.
You know, they're just trying to like, I don't know, fly past you and freak you out.
Right, right. Honestly, we've never had any issues with anything with the bats up in there. They pretty much, you know, we're kind of invading their space. And if you think about it, because they live there all year round. And so... But we take a walk through and all this other stuff. And as we're walking through, we're talking to them. We're telling them, hey, you know, we have people coming up to visit you. Some of them have traveled very far and have been looking forward to this. If you could maybe let us know that you're here and different stuff like that, just to kind of warm them up, I guess you could say, and give them a heads up, because we have much respect for whatever the spirits are. There, we welcome them, and we try to make things comfortable on both ends, both the guests and whatever the spirits are there, but we like to communicate with them. So we will usually take some time to go through and talk to them.
Oh, Connie, you're so calm, because if I was walking through Preston Castle by myself, getting the ghosts all ready for the tour, you know, please come out, guys. You know, we have some people coming out from Chicago. I mean, I would be so scared. Don't you ever get scared? It's like commonplace to you. It's fascinating to me.
You know, I guess I'm not scared because I've been going up there for so long that for me, I just don't think about it. I go up there even when I'm not doing the paranormal tours, and I, you know, walk through and I don't think about it necessarily. To me, it's not like a scary place. Of course, when things happen, yeah, it startles you. And I still get startled once in a while when I experience something, but I guess you can say that I've gotten comfortable and comfortable enough to actually even walk there with no lights on and no flashlight or anything like that.
Oh, no flashlight.
Yeah, I can do it.
Oh, see, I'd be triple packing those flashlights. I'd start smoking again just so I had lighters on me. Oh, yeah. Being in the dark is double scary.
I don't know, though, if I would spend the night by myself. I don't think I would do that.
Okay. That's your breaking point. That's where you draw the line.
Yeah, I would probably not stay the night by myself. I would probably do it with another person, but I don't think I would stay there by myself. I think it would probably get to me. But I've gotten to the point where not a whole lot bothers me walking through there. Once in a while, I'll feel a little creeped out, but most of the time, I'm pretty good with it.
So tell me about other people's experiences. What are the crazy ghost experiences that others have had?
Let's see. You know, a lot of the experiences that people have, they'll hear disembodied voices. And they'll see, you know, I'm not the only one that has seen, you know, apparitions and different stuff there for sure. I know that I haven't. In fact, even that night that I saw the full body apparition of what I think is a doctor, somebody else had said that they saw something similar to that earlier that night. So some of the other experiences, they'll see like twinkling lights, the disembodied voices, you know, once in a while, a full body apparition. People have seen objects move and stuff like that. I've seen objects move, you know, often we'll take like a ball or some toys or something like that for some of the boys to play with. Because some of these boys that, you know, were originally there, we think were as young as 7. So if you think about it, what would a 7-year-old, you know, what would they play with? Balls, cards, toy cars, trucks, different things like that. So I think somebody had put some playing cards down and then took a picture of it and then came back later and found that they had been moved.
Oh, they were playing with you.
They probably were.
Yeah.
So, different stuff like that. There's probably been a lot of people that have captured different pictures and stuff like that. I just can't verify that because I haven't seen any of the stuff. But I do believe that people have seen shadow figures and stuff like that. That we do see quite a bit. We'll see some shadow movements. There have been people that have seen young boys. And there was one where somebody had seen, or they thought they saw a boy standing at the top of the stairs. And they, you know, called out to them and said, you know, and was like, hey, what are you doing? And ran up after them. And at the top of these stairs, it's gated off because there are levels of the castle that are just not safe for the public to go through. And so there's gates that are locked that you can't go up to those levels. And this happened to be one of those levels where there was a gate at the top of the steps. And when the person ran up there to see where this boy had gone, it disappeared. There was no way for that boy to get past him without seeing him. So it was just, I think that kind of shook him up a little bit because he thought he had seen an actual boy.
He saw something. Yeah, he saw something.
Yeah, he did. He definitely saw something. So it's quite a bit of shadow type stuff. We'll see shadows or shadow people in there and kind of, you know, ducking their heads out. And I think it's more that they're just curious. They're curious to see what we're doing. And, you know, maybe they're messing with us. I don't know.
Oh. So how many people died there?
I don't know how many people have died. at the castle. I can imagine quite a few that were sick with different diseases and stuff like that, that, you know, vaccines and stuff weren't available at that time. But unfortunately, that is information that I don't have.
You know, a lot of people listening, they know the famous stories. I know you can't talk about some of them, but if you have any information about the famous hauntings there.
As far as specific people, I can't talk about some of that information, but as far as giving names and different stuff like that, I can't talk about it, or I'm not really, you know, 100% on the factual stories on those.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Connie. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
Do you have a creepy true crime or paranormal story that you would like to share on Amy Keeps It Creepy? I know you do. Please email a brief description of your story to info@creepypodcast.com. I can't wait to get creeped out. Thank you for listening.
Toxic content.